Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Shire folk. I just wanted to record a quick note at the top of this episode, which is that we recorded this before the untimely death of Chadwick Boseman. We do talk about Black Panther in this episode, and I just wanted to make a note, and I know the other halflings did as well, to say what an incredible person he was and what a profound impact he has had on all of our lives. I don't think it's hyperbole to say that he had a inspirational impact on an entire generation. Multiple generations, I think, to show young black girls and boys all around the world that we can be heroes, that we can rise up and take everything that we are owed. And so from the bottom of my heart, my prayers and my thoughts are with Chadwick's family during this incredibly difficult time. And I hope that you, that our listeners, will do the same in extending your thoughts and prayers to them. So thank you very much, Chadwick, for all that you did for us. You're an incredible person, and you will have always provided me with probably the best cinema-going experience of my life when I jumped out of my chair to celebrate you putting on that mask for the first time. So, rest in power, my king. Wakanda forever. Let's get on with the show. Hello, halflings! We are back with another episode for you today. As always, I am Jasper William Cartwright. I am joined by...
Leander Unati Lewis Nyaw, but everybody calls me Unati!
And...
Jeremy Cobb. But, I'm not sure, I might be running out of names.
Make them up.
Okay, have I said Cobbmeister yet?
No, you
okay, have some people, that's a real one. Some people call me Cobbmeister.
Nice. Yes. And like this is Three Black Halflings.
Yeah!
Oh my god!
You will come to terms with your own weakness!
Old Prince vibe?
Focus on your task!
Yeah. Just shut your mouth, no one is interested.
You think this is just a game?
Suffer and learn!
Let's make them even more black!
We're about to get into something real big now. And we are here. How is everyone doing today? We've had a really exciting week in the world of the Three Black Halflings. Lots of things are happening, which is really, really cool. Nati, how are you doing? How's the riches? Are the coffers still full?
Okay, I'm just going to lean in. Yeah, the coppers are really full.
She's finally going to just tell the people the truth.
She's finally owning it like she owns everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Opulence!
Yes.
I'm good. I've had a really good week. How about you guys?
Jeremy?
Yeah, I am well. It has been a good week for me as well.
Yeah, it has been a good week. I had a very fun session last night, which was...
Yeah, I was in that.
You were in that. I think it was a yet another adventure into the Dennis Culspring Industries and me as the DM suddenly having to work out how the world of business works. Let's start off with the tale from the table. I believe Jeremy has something for us this week.
Yes.
Go ahead.
All right. So this is not so much a specific tale, but but it's a general tale of a campaign that I run with two of my best friends from high school. Still two of my best friends today. One of whom is, I think both of whom have listened to the show. But one of whom is one of the biggest fans of this show. Shout out to Taylor.
Yeah,
my buddy.
Taylor! Yeah, massive shout out to Taylor. He was actually, breaking news, he was our first ever follower on Twitter. I found that out after you asked Jeremy the other day. He is our first ever follower on Twitter.
Wow.
And he literally likes and reposts everything.
Everything.
So massive shout out to Taylor.
He's a great man. And a good man is hard to find. So he and my other friend are in a game that I play. I DM. It's in a noir setting.
Ooh.
In a fantasy version of, I believe, 1948 New York. In this version, all of the names have been changed. So instead of New York, it's called New Bradford. Instead of America, it's called Cortesia. So we basically just, I think Bradford is a place near York. I can't remember. Or it's either that or it's a city in that area. And Cortez is obviously a very famous explorer in the Americas.
Yes.
Neither of them had ever played D&D before. But it has been a real joy getting to play with them, in particular, discovering just how overpowered some of their abilities are, in combat. So Taylor plays an Irish immigrant, he's a Kalashtar, and he's a paladin. And his backstory is that he's this gigantic man. He's like 6'6", I think. Just huge. And he's a professional baseball player. He's one of the best professional baseball players in the world. And he's just recently been traded from the Lincoln Blue Boots, a.k.a. the Boston Red Sox, to the New Bradford Minutemen, a.k.a. the New York Yankees. And as part of his paladin mission, he's started to fight crime at night. And he goes out dressed in all black, carrying a huge baseball bat with barbed wire wrapped around it, and throwing baseballs at people. Amazing. And he calls himself Bane. And he's also got a tremendous mustache. I would be remiss if I did not mention the tremendous mustache
that he possesses. That sounds incredible.
And on his very first night, he discovered some gang activity going on by the docks. And so when he got involved, one of the little goblins ran over to attack him, and he threw a baseball at him. But his strength is so high that he killed the goblin.
Oh, no.
With a baseball. He just... And the goblin, he was hoping to subdue him, but the goblin just... And he was like, oh, no! And it turned into utter carnage. There were 4 dead people by the end of this.
Oh, my God.
And the other player was also there. He works at the docks. So he was there on trying to meet his friend. Other character's name is Sergio. Sergithar, full name, but Sergio. He is an Eladrin elf from Italy. And he was there to meet his friend Shad and got involved. And his friend Shad showed up, attacked Bane, knocked him out. And so in retaliation, he hit Shad with a monkey wrench, rolled a natural 20, and partially disemboweled Shad. So Shad ended up in the hospital.
Yeah.
But
monkey
wrenches, yeah.
Guys. Best weapon in D&D, confirmed.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. It's a reskinned longsword.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. The most ridiculous one was basically a boss fight. And Bane critted on a smite against this huge bugbear named Desperate Dalton. I think he even threw in another smite on top of it. And one hit, Desperate Dalton was a shadow on the ground.
Wow.
That was all that was left.
Wow.
It was basically an explosion of light. Yeah, and it was all over.
That's
so
incredible. I also really hope that you're, like, fully committing to the mechanics of sport as well, because I really want to see a paladin playing baseball.
We fully are. Awesome. We have full-on games. He rolls athletics checks. There's rolls for the other team. There's rolls for his teammates.
Oh, okay, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I need to play that. I think that would combine my two, like, biggest loves, like sport and D&D. That would be incredible.
There's actual cameos from actual New York Yankees players at the time.
Amazing.
So Joe DiMaggio is Josephus DiMartino. Yogi Berra is Yogaius the Bear Beraya, who ran afoul of some people in like a dispute and got polymorphed permanently into a bear. So he's just a bear now. Still allowed to play, because, you know, there's no rule a bear can't play baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
So
he's still
a catcher. Stuff like that.
Amazing.
Yeah. Fun time.
That's really amazing. This is a side note, but it actually takes us quite nicely into our topic for this week. I always remember in Final Fantasy X was like my dream. I loved that game with a passion when I was younger. And I remember I literally spent hours playing Blitzball. I loved it so much. I got to like the top of the league tables, which was not easy, by the way. Like the amount of effort they put into creating that Blitzball is like incredible. Like players have like form, and there's like other teams who you can like go out and like meet in the world, and like it is mental how much they put.
Is it like a full league?
Yeah. There's a full league, and then there's like sub. It's like a proper like. If I remember it right, someone will probably correct me, but. If I remember it right, it's a bit like a NFL where there's like a East and West, and then you come together in like a another like best of league.
Same with MLB.
Yeah,
MLB has the National League and the American.
So yeah,
league.
Basically like same as that, and like so that they put so much effort into it, and I was like, this feels really specific for like nerds who really really love sport, because I feel like there's a lot of nerds that like sport but don't like love sports, you know. And I was like, this feels like really specifically for me, and I love it.
That's amazing.
And it was so cool, honestly. One of my favorite cartoons as a kid was Galactic Football, but that's a whole another discussion. Anyway, this week we are actually going to be discussing pop culture. We thought that it would be quite cool to discuss stuff like TV shows and films, as well as our discussions a lot, with Dungeons and Dragons, because it all kind of ties in. And the reason why the needle is hard to move on Dungeons and Dragons is because the needle isn't moving elsewhere as quickly as perhaps we'd like it to be. So I think all of these conversations are happening simultaneously, which for obviously really, really good reasons. And we kind of had the idea from this episode when, Jeremy, you pointed out the an episode of Community had been removed.
Yes, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, the first of the D&D episodes. It's from season 2. I can't remember, it might be episode 11? It's from the second half of season 2. It's after Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas, but...
I should say removed from Netflix.
Yes, it's been removed, and I think it was removed, I don't know if Community was still on Hulu, but I think it was removed from every streaming platform that carries the show.
Wow.
Because, specifically, of a joke that occurs towards the beginning of the episode in which the character of Ben Chang, Senor Chang, is cosplaying as a drow, which essentially means that he has covered his entire body in black paint, and is wearing elf ears and a white hair wig. And, of course, to somebody who hasn't played D&D before, it just straight up looks like he's in blackface.
And it's acknowledged in the episode as well.
Yeah. Shirley, or I think the first mention of it, Shirley is like, are we just going to ignore this hate crime?
Yeah.
And then he explains that he's like, I'm a drow. And then later on, Pierce literally calls him blackface. Mm. Pierce Hawthorne, he's like, I attack blackface. And then he dies. Then... Chang dies and leaves.
It's very sad.
But
But this is, it sparked a really interesting conversation for us, because we were saying how, as members of the D&D community, as we've discussed many times on this show, how problematic the drow are. And they're slowly getting better, but there's definitely still issues there. With the fact that we felt like, or at least I felt like, that D&D was making a social commentary with this particular joke, in the way it does with a lot of jokes, and it was very self-referential, and Chang even goes a ways to almost explaining the fact that the drow are problematic, and it was very much picked for a reason because they were drawing attention to the fact it was problematic. So it felt like a bit of an odd choice for me that they chose to take it down.
I definitely second that. I guess because of like the recent resurgence of the BLM movement, even though it didn't really like go away, things have been problematic for a while. But because of like this kind of
we've been here the whole time.
But because of this kind of quote unquote resurgence, I think everybody is kind of like trying to like backpedal and pander and do everything they possibly can. And like, thank you very much for removing the episode from a community that was actually pointing out something that was flawed.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for that empty gesture. But can we please arrest the murderers of Breonna Taylor? That is the thing we are wanting. Can we defund the police?
Yep.
That is what we wanted. We didn't ask for anybody to take down episodes from Community.
Yeah.
We didn't ask for any brown ladies to be removed from syrup bottles.
Yep.
We just want you to defund the police.
Yeah. I think this is exactly it. It's about misreading these kind of social moments. And I can understand the desire to want to kind of get things right and to not offend people, but I think that there's a real, I think we've got to realize that like we within the sort of gaming and TV and whatever world are, we're very good at being kind of very like self-flagellating and being a bit like, no, we have to be perfect all the time. And like, I think we struggle to acknowledge mistakes in a nuanced way. Quite often it gets into a bit of a screaming match where something like Community can definitely get taken, blown up as like, well, I can't believe that this episode is still on Netflix. You know what I mean? I can understand where that conversation came from.
I do understand, sure, like how you can be kind of enraged by that, maybe.
Maybe.
But it's just like, then you've missed the point.
Yes.
Like, do you not know how satire works or comedy? I'm confused.
I mean, I think the problem is that if you remove that episode, then why aren't you removing all like the gay jokes that Piers makes?
And actually, there's an episode where Pierce dresses up as, it's a parody of Johnny Carson's Swami character and like tans his skin. It's very openly acknowledged as being inappropriate on the show because Pierce is an old racist dude. But that's literally, I think that episode, Pierce in that costume is the image that you see on Netflix when you look at that episode.
Well, there you go.
Of all shows to target as well, I think that was the one thing that really confused me, because from TV in that era now, honestly, Community is one of the most diverse shows, certainly American sitcoms, that you're likely to see.
Yeah.
In that a third of the main cast was black. And in fact, well, if you count Chang, and I think more than a third was not white. It was always much more progress. Like, plus Abed, I forgot about Danny Pudi.
Yeah.
Literally half of the study group was like half of the main characters of the show were not white.
Non-white.
And it often dealt with those people's experiences, not constantly, but from time to time, it would deal with those people's experiences as not white, as people of color in a mostly white world. And it would deal also, it made fun of white people's attempts to try and be inoffensive, such as with the school's mascot, the human being.
Yeah, the human being.
yeah. Like, I think it's just...
actually chilling.
Even a show like that, it is possible for a show like that to mess up, but I don't think that that's an example of it happening.
I completely agree. This is what I was going to say. Staying on the topic is that... I wonder whether we've become so obsessed with like the context of everything that if we feel like if we don't have context for something, we can't have a nuanced discussion about it, which is kind of where we're at in like a Twitter age and whatever that we live in. Like nuanced conversations about like knee-jerk reactions are never, they're never really forthcoming. Like people react to stuff in a very... 100% way and don't leave much room for discussion. And so I think that the concern is, and this is, I mean, again, this is me trying to put myself in the mind of someone who I don't understand. The concern is because there's no context for that, because there's no context for people who don't watch D&D or don't play D&D, knowing that the prow is problematic, that they think, oh, people won't know that they're making a commentary. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, and I think that's a really dangerous place to be in, because like we can't have comedy if we're always going to be obsessed with like explaining the full context of a situation or, you know.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but that's individual personal labor. Like, do the work. Like, educate yourself. If you don't know what the drow is, Google will sort it for you. So go onto Google, and Google drow, and then you'll understand the context. But that's on individuals is what I'm saying. If I'm going to expect somebody to do the emotional labor and the intellectual labor of learning about African history, then, you know, or like engaging with, you know, like slave traders statues that need to be pulled down, fine. If I'm going to expect that, then it should also be expected of me to go out there and research what this thing is very briefly. Like we all have a personal responsibility to educate ourselves.
Absolutely. And I think moreover as well, Netflix have, if you're buying a show with all of its episodes or you are Community itself, like be prepared to, you know, if you've made a decision to make a social commentary or whatever, you've put a piece of art out into the world, you know, be prepared that people might push back on it and be okay either living with it or having to explain it. Like that's kind of the, do you know what I mean? Like if you're putting something out into the world for people to consume, people are paying their money to consume it, they're gonna share their opinion. Obviously you don't engage with like trolls, but like be prepared that people might say, oh, what about this? And then you can explain, No. Hey, if you actually do some research on the drow, like you said, go this away, educate yourself.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
And it's they give context for it even in the episode. I think that's what really the fact that he is a fan of Dungeons and Dragons from just the way they depict him in the episode. Yeah. And he says, "I'm a drow." Like I think he even says, "I'm a dark elf." In addition to saying that he's a drow, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But like it's. That because I had never played D&D when that episode came out, so I didn't know what that was. But then upon hearing him say what it was, I was like, "Huh?" Okay. And then I looked it up, and I was like, "Oh, okay."
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I've been trying to like learn all of the Forgotten Realms lore because I'm a nerd. So I was watching a video. In case you haven't
noticed. We all are here.
Yeah. Let's be real.
Yeah. Let's
you
be
could
real.
Call the show Three Black Nerds.
Yeah,
and it still
it's works. The same thing.
Yeah. So like, and obviously I was kind of like, you know, like doing some like stuff in the kitchen, whatever, and just listening to it in the background. And I kind of caught an image, and it was like three people dressed up as drow, three white people dressed up as drow in full blackface, and I was like, well, you see, that's when it's problematic. I know you want to dress up as drow at this Renaissance fair, but like, did you look at yourself in the mirror before you left the house? How did you get to this event? Because if you're on public transport,
I'm worried for you more than anything. More than I'm offended, I'm worried for you.
did you drive there? Are you okay? Are you still alive?
Yeah, are you still with us? Like
that's the last known photograph.
Do you know what I mean? I think if you take a moment and just look at yourself in the mirror quickly and go, if I step outside, am I going to get slapped in the face? And if the answer is yes, then take it off.
And like this, yeah, and exactly. And there's examples across the spectrum with that as well. That is not just like about black facing. It's about so many different things that we just like go, do you know what? Like for going out in a public event, maybe even at home, maybe you just don't need to do it. You know, there's plenty of options. Mm. And this is also the thing. There's so many options. You know, like you guys, there's so many pick things that you could dress up as. So many. Why do you have to do like
you could be a goblin. Goblins are green.
Yeah.
No humans are green that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
You know, like you could be an orc. You could be a hobgoblin. Hobgoblins are red.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like bright red and furry. I don't know.
Oh,
Dragonborn.
Yeah. I do think it's interesting though, because I don't know if you've noticed, but I feel like in a lot of like the fan art and things I've seen now of drow, they're definitely pushing more towards like a genuine purple in skin tone, which I do think is potentially slightly interesting. Like it feels like there's a movement away from what was very kind of like charcoal, like dark, clearly black skin. It's very much like a purple iridescent kind of quality like to it. Like there's a lot of the newer artwork they feature in the books and stuff. So maybe just
or gray a lot of times. You see a lot of gray.
But maybe if you're
some really ashy drow.
Need some
moisturizer. Get your shea butter out, girl.
Get your shea butter.
Shea butter by Lolf.
Yeah, that's another thing as well. Like someone needs to homebrew some shea butter for D&D. Like we will never be truly equal in the world of D&D if there is shea butter available and cocoa butter available everywhere in the
shea
in
butter.
The realms.
It's in the explorer's pack. Every pack.
Coconut oil.
Absolutely, like like a hair pick, all that. Like it needs
all of that all stuff. Of that. You need like some moringa oil for your edges, like. Like they have to be laid.
We're gonna have to homebrew a Black Explorers pack now for your DBOs or something.
We're gonna have to
put some shea butter
That's
and
awesome.
Stuff. That's so funny. That's really
great.
Really funny. I think moving on, we had a few other examples of a few other pop culture things that I think we wanted to throw out. Because I know. I don't know. Did you want to dive in, Unati?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, there's been a little bit of, like, hubbub on the internet lately.
Really?
About an Asian actor named Peter Shinkoda in Daredevil. Because what happened is, I think his character got cut from the series. Mm. And also, a lot of the sort of Asian story arcs were also kind of cut from the show.
Sure.
Because one of the Marvel bosses, Jeff Loeb, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, Jeff Loeb. He's a really good comic writer, actually. He's written some really good comics.
Okay, cool. Awesome. Jeff Loeb said that people wouldn't be interested in Asian people.
Wow. I mean, check out the box office for Crazy Rich Asians. I mean, shut your mouth.
It's in the name. And,
you know.
Yeah. I was just very confused by that. I'm just like, what do you... I mean... People have been saying this thing for a while, like you can't like sell a big motion picture with, you know, like an African American lead or an Asian lead or, you know,
or even an African Indian lead. Do you know what I mean?
even like an African African lead, but I'm just like, but did you not see how we broke the box office with Black Panther?
Yeah, like are we ignoring this? Yeah. Like
are we ignoring Toni Morrison's Oscar winning Beloved?
Yeah.
Yes, that was directed by a white dude as well, which is kind of like a bit weird, but fine, whatever.
Yeah, because Denzel and Idris, they got no pulling power at all.
Nobody ever wants to watch
Will Smith, more like Will.
Yeah,
who?
Yeah.
Will,
exactly. Do you know what
Viola
mean?
Like, boring, am I right? Like, no.
I'm like, where are you getting this crazy idea from? And are you, like, I don't understand, like, you're still throwing out the same tired concept.
Yeah, it's really strange to me. It's really strange because there's clearly a thirst from all audiences to engage with material that we haven't seen before. Do you know what I mean? That's why Black Panther did so well, is because we were suddenly going, what's all this music? What's all this, like, what's the way these people are dressing? What's this, you know, what's this, like... society. It's like
I feel like you were about to launch into what is this from, what is it, the
this?
Nightmare Before Christmas. Yeah, what is
oh my
this?
God, I'm gonna have to try. And I'm gonna have to, we have to parody what's this with Wakanda now. Like with Jack Skellington turning up to Wakanda like, what is this? Just holding up some like jerk chicken or something. Like, what is this? But no, yeah.
I think also with in the case of Daredevil, when you pull away the Asian people's storylines, what you're left with is white Matt Murdock fighting armies of faceless Asian people, and just defeating them one after another, and they're just enemies. That's all they are. They're just an
we
evil
don't
force.
Want senseless villains any longer. I cannot explain
it's-
this.
Boring.
I cannot explain this to you anymore. Actually, this is quite an interesting thing, which might serve your point, Jeremy. I recently got a new job, which is very exciting. As part of that job, I've been analysing how images perform, like how like audiences look at images on like streaming platforms and how they receive them. And actually, it's been I think it's Netflix proved that when you show polarizing characters, so like the villains, quote unquote, of the story, people genuinely engage with the topic more often. And I think that that is something we found so much recently. Mm-hmm. You look at Killmonger, Loki, Thanos. Mm. Like, these are the villains that we care about now. And I think these are the successes of those shows. Like, and if you give us two-dimensional villains, it's boring. I think that's one of the reasons why, like, for me, I lost interest with the Defenders quite quickly. Like, that kind of... Like, I really got into, like, Luke Cage. But generally, I felt like... Yeah. Luke Cage was an example because Mahershala Ali just killed it as the bad guy, and I loved it. But I felt like in some of the others, you're right. You were just into faceless, kind of generic bad guys that our hero could just punch their way through. And you're just like, well, I've seen this 1,000 times. And it's not interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's not interesting. And I mean, like, okay, cool, fine. let me just really, like, hone in on my point. Fine, if you want to do, like, faceless fighting stuff, then, like, look at something like The Raid. Cool, have a very simple premise, have the guy go into the building.
Don't pretend you're doing something more complex.
Don't pretend that you're trying to, don't make it us.
Yeah.
Just do the simple thing. Yeah. Just pull a John Wick. Somebody gives somebody a puppy, the person kills the puppy,
I
and now we want that person dead.
Yeah.
Simple.
Yeah.
It's clean. It does the job.
I agree.
But now when you're deliberately removing story arcs to continue to create a faceless enemy, that's just racism.
It is. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
It's just racism. It's not even sparkling racism.
Nope.
It's not even diet racism. Yeah. That's not racism light. That's
this
a racism,
racism
heavy.
Zero racism light. Yes. Racism this light. Is.
Yeah, it's just
this
racism.
Is, yeah, this is just. This is just racism. I think to go back to the original thing, the original point as well about this gentleman's, Mr. Loeb's comments, is just, I just cannot understand where the fear comes from, because you are already spending a huge amount of money with an established product that you know that, like, a certain amount of people are guaranteed to go and engage with this thing. So what difference does it make? Do you know what I mean? Don't, like, and what annoys me is the way that he's phrased the comment is almost like, no, like, I can almost imagine how the conversation goes down, where it's like, no, I want to see Asian stories, but, like, the people don't. No, you're lying. You don't want to see it. That's the issue.
Yeah.
That, like, let's be frank, that's the issue, because actually we all want to see it, and we've proved it with our box, like, with our money at the box office. We've proved it time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll continue to prove it. Do you know what I mean? And actually what will happen is Daredevil will just descend into becoming a worse and worse show, or it will turn into like Iron Fist or whatever the hell that was.
That was maybe not the best
I remember I saw the thing came up, and like normally, as I was explaining to Jeremy last night, I go all in for like a bad something, like a bad TV show, bad film. I love watching them. It's great. But that, I was like, no. That's already offensive. And I'm literally looking at the poster.
I think I sort of tried, because I like to watch I like to watch train wrecks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's
what
we like, train wrecks.
I sort of tried just to understand what never to do when you create your own things. And it...
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
To add insult to injury, I'm very sorry, young man, but I don't know where you learned to act.
Going after him.
I don't know. Like, it's like, at least if you're going to deliver sparkling racism, can you at least find somebody who can act?
Wow.
Like,
I feel bad for this. I've never seen the show. Like, I've read comics that have Iron Fist in them, but I've never seen the show.
Guys, you're like, I've never in my life seen a more dead thing. A dead thing. Like, and you're like, how did you get the job? How?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah, surely.
How
you
many
didn't do
people
that
were seen?
Surely you didn't do that in the audition.
This is like, I'm feeling, this is like, this sounds like the Kanye West Sway interview with the how? How, Sway? How, Marvel? You ain't got the answers,
you know, because you sit there and you go, but okay, you like, as an actor as well, I understand casting processes and things. I'm like, but I know at least five other lovely white boys. You can still be racist, dude. I know five other lovely white boys who are great actors.
If you want to be racist, nailed, and you can, want, but at least be racist good. Like,
at least good. Well, like,
we want three billboards racism. That's the level of racism we want.
Like, don't do it badly. Don't literally give us the poster child for white mediocrity. Like, don't do it.
It is just actively more offensive, though, because the thing is, you've touched on a point there, is when you go, when you sit there and you go, like, at least if you're doing it, you're like, you're doing it so well, you know, like, this guy is so good that you can almost believe that they looked at him and they went, do you know what, we want to cast someone else, but he's just so good. It's still wrong.
Yeah,
you know,
still wrong.
But we can almost believe it, but when it's bad, and you're sat there going, there's so many of us that could have done a good job.
Here's my question for you guys. As somebody who is a fan, or I guess I still am kind of a fan of Marvel Comics, but I very much was a fan of Marvel Comics in my teen years. And like I said, I've never read an Iron Fist comic, but I've read comics in which Iron Fist appears. He's teamed up with Spider-Man before, in like Maximum Carnage and stuff. And that's the character's name is Danny Rand, right? Am I mixing him up with somebody?
Yes.
He's Danny Rand, and he's canonically white. So you're going to run into that problem pretty much if you're trying to do a faithful adaptation. Would you suggest then either retconning the character to be someone else?
Yes.
Okay.
Immediately retconning.
My suggestion would just be don't do
like,
Iron Fist.
Yeah.
Well, that would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
There's still Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
Shang-Chi exists.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can do Shang-Chi.
Yeah, I mean, like,
he's
don't
Asian.
Do Iron Fist or take the opportunity to actually just retcon the thing. It's fine. It's okay.
I think I agree with you, Nati, purely because I think we've alluded to this a few times on the show now when we're talking about reclaiming of something. And actually, if this is about, you know, Marvel already, kind of like we were having a conversation earlier about them kind of profiting off of a different culture without any of their benefit going to that culture. Maybe this is an opportunity for them to rectify that previous wrong, and to do something positive and have and make him an Asian character. Do you know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I don't see where the issue with that lies, except for in hardcore, like, comic book fans who will...
Yeah, it'd be Iron Fist fans. It'd be the Iron
but
Fist
they
fans.
Need to be but they need to be challenged to be more open-minded. Simple.
First of all, the greatest kung fu fighter in the world is a white dude.
I mean, we know it's not.
Like we know it's not, and I mean, like, and also, okay, cool, fine, fair enough. You can train your whole life and become the best, whatever shade you are. But like, can we just acknowledge like a whole rich history and culture, and just retconning, like, just retconning? Mm-hmm. That's growth. No one is saying that, like, no one is saying that no one has ever made a mistake before. It's fine, but we learn from our mistakes, and just make him Asian.
I think my suggestion would, instead of doing Iron Fist, do Shang-Chi. And then if you're going to introduce Iron Fist, in my understanding of those characters, Iron Fist was usually the lead and Shang-Chi was kind of the sidekick.
Yeah, sure.
Swap it.
Mm-hmm,
keep Danny Rand white, but have him be a white sidekick to the main character, Shang-Chi. Because that way I don't see the point of including the character. I mean, you can, but if you're going to change the character drastically, because I haven't read a lot of the comics, but as I understand, the idea of him being kind of coming into this culture from the outside was part of the character.
Sure.
If you're going to do the character, you might as well just do the character rather than If they had already done a version of Iron Fist on screen, then I'd be let's do an Asian Iron Fist. But my thought is, okay, well, if you have this version of the character, then let's find a way to mitigate those issues. And either, if you're going to have him be the lead, either have the show be about him being completely in over his head and not realizing what he's getting into and having to, like, constantly, like, challenge his previously held biases and understanding of the world and everything, or swap it and have Shang-Chi be the lead and then have Iron Fist essentially be the sidekick or the friend, like Foggy Nelson is Daredevil's buddy.
I think this is where the frustration for me as a long-term nerd and fan of like Marvel and all these kinds of things comes from, though, is that we've now been talking about Daredevil for probably the total of 15 minutes, and we've already come up with several options which would be better than the final product that they arrived at. And we are three people with sort of minimal in comparison to the...
Compared to Jeff Loeb. Jeff Loeb wrote Hush, dude.
That's what I mean.
Jeff Loeb wrote Batman Hush. He wrote Spider-Man Blue. Like, he's legit.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't quite understand where... or how shows like that are still getting made when you have... You do have a very diverse cast in front of you, or potentially the issue maybe here lies is that maybe there's not the most diverse sort of behind the scenes executive producer level people. You know, maybe that's where the issue lies, is that no one's actually having these thoughts. Yeah. No one's presenting them, which again is something that drastically needs to change, because
it's got to change at the top.
I'm bold.
Once it changes at the top, you'll see the rest of it change.
Yeah,
because whenever people have like this discussion about like, oh, diversity needs to be slow and measured, we need to take our time, I'm like, no, it's actually not that complicated.
No, it's really not.
All you need to do is you need to inject diversity into boardrooms and then watch, and then just watch it all shift.
Yeah, watch it trickle down.
Because watch it it will have to shift, because then there'll be somebody in there championing these stories and go, well, I know at least five other people who could do the job, and they're people of color. There you go.
Yeah, and I think the question of like, oh, is it fair on like I think we need to take fair out of this equation, because it's been so unfair for so long, and so unfair to however many people of color up to this point who have not had the opportunity to be an exec or to be a producer. So I just think we need to take the question of fair out of it. Like, if you happen to let go of two executive producers or whatever who have been earning Lord only knows how much money over the last few years, I am sure they will be fine. You know, we're not talking about throwing someone out on the streets here, you know, losing their job or whatever. We're talking like, they're probably be fine. They're probably going to finance their own productions, and they're going to make lots of money, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah,
do you know
what
I mean?
The issue is that it's currently unfair.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, it is already unfair. In order to make it fair, you're going to have to change the current system.
Exactly.
That's the only way to do it. And that may end up being unfair to some other people, but in the larger balance of things, you are changing the entire industry for the better.
Yes.
That's what I would say.
So moving on, just because I was really interested and excited, because I wanted to talk to you guys about a positive thing that we were discussing recently, which is when you just get it really, really, really right. And that is Watchmen, the TV show. We are all big fans of this show. And it's, I mean, someone else is going to have to go first talking about the show, because otherwise I can't
just,
even.
I'm going to, just the edit alone. Like, I used to work in post for a little while. The cut.
Yeah.
The freaking cut. If they don't win Best Emmy for Best Editor, I'm going to be very confused. The cut alone. Mm. Let me not even get started on the performances, the script writing, the development from the source material, like the choices, the social commentary. Like, it broke me. I'm sorry. Somebody else stop talking.
I'll jump in. There you go.
I'll jump in. Watchmen, I think, was my favorite book as a teenager. And into my 20s for a little bit. I absolutely love that series. I most of the other stuff DC has since published, like all the before Watchmen stuff, I've pretty much skipped that.
Sure.
I was not a huge fan of the 2009 movie. I liked it. I thought they'd gotten certain parts of it. I thought that certain parts of it were very well done. But overall, I did not think it was a good adaptation of the story. I was extremely skeptical of this series going in. I saw the trailer and was like, okay. But then this dude on my Facebook page just constantly would post about it. Like, every new episode, he'd be like, this is one of the greatest TV shows ever made! And, like, everything. And I was like, okay, all right. Let's give it a shot. Because if this dude likes it this much, it might be at least good.
Yeah,
bro, first episode, I was like, oh, wow.
Boom.
Oh, wow, this is good.
Oh, shit.
And it's... It adapts not just the story, but it adapts the tone. It feels to me like watching it felt like reading the book. And in terms of how full the world felt and how complete and how much everything made sense and how much they incorporated from the original series. And it wasn't just in fan service-y bits. It was like, no, the events of that story have shaped where we are now. And to the point where you'll be confused if you haven't read the original book because of how much of the current world is derived from the source material. And just, it's so executed so well.
And how they took the source material and adapted it in that way, so it was so truthful, but yet rung so unbelievably true to, like, now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'd say it's probably become even more relevant in 2020 than it was in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, like, with everything that's happening. The Tulsa flashback episode, which then feeds into the Hood of Justice, is possibly one of the best single episodes of television. And, like, this is something that I think, you know, we were keen to discuss on the show because it's... examining a period of history in such a way that I think it transcends whether you're like, this isn't like a, I think sometimes these kind of episodes can feel like, this is one for you guys. And it was not that. This was just this was an unadulterated ride through something that was difficult to watch. It was difficult to be a part of, but you could not stop watching.
Stop, look, I know. It's literally one of the most brilliantly executed explorations of generational trauma that I have ever seen in my entire life.
It's like a full-on metaphor. Like, it's a literalization of generational trauma.
Yeah. Like, I was weeping through that whole thing.
And it's one of those things where it's like when you're watching it, you're going, yes, I know. I've experienced that. This is this is what's happening right now.
Fuck, it's so good.
So yeah, if you haven't watched Watchmen, you need to go watch it. Performances as well. Yeah. Regina King.
Guys,
Regina King killed
I'm sorry. Like, everybody is
there's not
there.
A weak performance.
Not a single person in that show did like, I was like, yes, now these are actors. Congratulations. You see?
Yes.
This is what it looks like, guys.
I was saying to the guys earlier when we were discussing the possibility of talking about Watchmen in the show, I was saying one of my favorite parts is, and this is what I think is so good about this show, is that normally kind of old rich white man is a story that I'm done with. I don't need to see it. It's fine. But Jeremy Irons, chewing scenery, turning up and doing his
so
bit
good.
Was one of the best parts of that show. Like, it was incredible.
He is just a G, man.
Yeah,
so he is such
he
a
is a G,
boss.
Yeah, for sure.
He is as yo. I mean, everything. Wonka Mundo, like, every character was just amazing. And look, people care about Asian representation. Look at that whole fucking story arc.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at that. I mean, like, and the actress who played that part. Oh my god, she's just so incredible.
Lady True.
She's just
the
so incredible.
Lady True.
Lady
True. Yeah.
I'm looking up the cast list now, so I could hopefully give names to all these people.
This is an interesting one as well, because I would almost argue as well that there was that there was elements of stereotype explored within that show. Again, and this is what we bring Watchmen up, is it's about how you do this in a really sensitive way that makes sense, that empowers your characters and not strips them down to the bare bones. I think, like, Lady True's depiction in the show is Asian genius. She walked, you know, she quite often, like, she's walking around like her guard, like, you know, her sort of Japanese gardener, you know. Yeah. There's a very distinct
Hong Chow,
style
by the way,
and look.
Is the name of the actress, Hong Chow.
Hong Chow, amazing. Yeah, her, Chow. Oh god, she kills it. But at no point do you look at Lady True and just see a stereotypical Asian woman. You see an empowered, complicated character who has really dubious morals and, you know, whatever. And, like, and, like, so you examine the character way before. Like, it didn't even occur to me that it felt it could be perceived as stereotypical until way afterwards. Do you know what I mean? And by that point, I'm like, well, then it was using a stereotype to service
the
story.
She's all honestly not dissimilar to Ozymandias in the original series. Like, her characterization, her personality and everything. I also want to shout out Tim Blake Nelson as Looking Glass. Bro. Ooh. Loved Looking Glass.
Yeah.
Loved Looking Glass.
Yeah, it was really, really powerful. And I think, Jeremy, you raised a really good point, and I'd love you to, when we were talking about this before, and I'd love you to share this with the audience, about using Rorschach as this sort of proxy for white nationalism, which is utterly genius. But I'd love you to talk about how you felt about it.
Okay, so I thought I understood that a lot of the controversy from the show came from some people really hating how Rorschach had essentially become a symbol for white nationalists. But I think that it's important to recognize that in the original series, Rorschach was essentially a fascist. He makes homophobic statements. He makes racist statements. The magazine he reads, The New Frontiersman, is a far right newspaper that has full on like racist cartoons in it and makes racist statements. Like, that is where his politics lies. He talks about, I think he mentions that Nixon is a great man, or I forget who he mentions as a great man, but like somebody, oh no, he mentions the comedian as a great man, I think. And the comedian is also very, like in the original series, a vile figure in a lot of ways.
Yeah, really bad.
But Rorschach is not meant to be someone that you think is a good person. He's a smelly, violent, brutal, myopic individual who really needs a lot of help. That's basically, and he's like Batman gone horribly wrong. Basically, who's just obsessed with a crusade of justice. And I think it's very easy, especially for a lot of the people who read this series, a lot of them are teenage boys when they first read it, to get taken in by the coolness of this, you know, this really tough, streetwise renegade with like the cool voice and the cool outfit and the awesome mask, and he can't be stopped, and he won't turn away from his principles, like he's and all that stuff.
No matter how other people react to them.
Never surrender, even in the face of Armageddon. That whole, like, that's his whole thing, but. Alan Moore was not intending for people to look at him and be like, that's who I want to be. He's a bad dude. Yeah. And he absolutely is the kind of person that would serve as an inspiration to people with far right leanings.
And I think that was such a genius move to showcase it in that way. Like, even down to the fact they had, like, the church that they all, like, did their videos from. Like, I just thought... And I thought what was so amazing about that is it really hit the nail on the head. When you're talking about, like, this idea of, like, heroism, which is massive at the moment, which is where, like, you've got very polarizing characters, like the current president of the United States, whose name I shall not speak. We do not speak his name, just in case he, like, appears or something, because that's one of his superpowers. Yeah, that's the last thing I need right now.
I don't want to deal with that.
Yeah. He who shall not be named.
But you have a character... but you have a character very much like that now, who is tapping into the same sort of kind of teenage boy mentality. Do you know what I mean? That same sort of, like, oh, he won't back down, he won't... you know, and I think so... it was really, really interesting them actively choosing to make him a symbol of something, like a symbol for what these people believed in, because that is what the kind of modern day version of like far out heroism is like having a character so outrageous and so outlandish. And, you know, we have a very similar thing in the UK with people like Tommy Robinson and like Nigel Farage. There's a very similar thing where like they're so crazy and so outlandish that people are like, yeah, they don't back down and I respect that. And like and so it really held a microscope, I think, up to that that kind of behavior, which I thought was like ingenious, to be honest.
That just reminded me of this really good video that I saw. It's by Kyle Colgren on YouTube. Brows held high. He basically looks at how after the rise of the Third Reich and Hitler, a lot of people were wondering, how on earth did we end up here? How did these guys get in power? And there's a school of philosophers, I cannot remember, they're really, really famous. Maybe the Hamburg School? I can't remember. But they basically looked at the popular culture in Weimar Germany leading up to the rise of the Nazis and looked at how there was like a running theme in the art of the time involving like this secret menace that's like hiding among us and it must be stopped and taken out. And we need like a strong leader to get rid of this evil force that's hiding in the shadows. And what's interesting is that the people who created those works, a lot of those films, were not themselves fascists, but those films seemed to reflect. They seem to reflect an attitude, perhaps, at the time. And then he extrapolates that. This came out in 2016, to showing a series of. It was like, what we want is somebody who's strong and powerful and won't back down from all of these like namby pamby pansy liberals. And he's showing like clips from Breaking Bad, he's showing like the upper class that you see in The Hunger Games and how ridiculously they're depicted, and how you see, I mean, with the age of golden age of television, what you saw was the coming of the strong white anti-hero, the strong white male anti-hero. And you see people like Tony Soprano and Don Draper and Kevin Spacey's character in House of Cards and Walter White. And a lot of those characters, I mean, even prior to that, you see Tyler Durden as an example as well. A lot of these characters,
that's a really interesting
one, held up by their creators as being bad people. But the fact that we see these kinds of people, and the fact that the audience often receives them differently than how they're depicted in the shows or how they're meant to be received, could be an indication of how people's attitudes were leading into the 2016 presidential election in America.
I think that's absolutely
great,
true, because I think that because I think the 2016 presidential campaign was probably started out as a joke.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's probably a lot of people that were like, yeah, this would be good for like his just overall kind of look and image, and, you know, we'll say all this crazy stuff, and then it worked.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's a lot of people we've got to run the country
the
now.
Same thing with Brexit.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a way of Nigel Farage getting a platform on and thinking, this won't work, but I'll rouse up a few people and some people will get angry, and then it worked and we were left holding
And he immediately quit.
This is the darkest timeline.
Yes. Yeah. Literally.
This is literally the darkest timeline.
It is
another community reference.
I wish I could. I wish I could jump to another timeline.
Yeah.
I really do, because this is madness.
This is madness. The goodness of this timeline is this show for me. This is the goodness.
Also,
any
of you community fans, there's an actual podcast called The Darkest Timeline, run by Ken Jeong and Joel McHale, who played Senor Chang and Jeff Winger, respectively. Very good podcast. They've interviewed almost every single cast member of Community at various times. They did a cast reading as a charity for they reread Cooperative Polygraphy, the episode basically Pierce's funeral episode. They had what's his name, Pedro Pascal, come in and play the Walton Goggins character. It's really good. It's a really good podcast.
Awesome.
Worth checking out. Awesome. Anyone who
That's really cool. We'll definitely, I'm definitely going to check that out.
Actually, Ken Jeong apologized on that podcast for the blackface, interestingly enough. Huh. Yeah. I don't think they, I haven't listened to the most recent episodes, so I don't know if they've really gone in depth acknowledging it, but they, but Ken Jeong apologized at the beginning of one of the recent episodes about it.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Maybe we'll have to get Ken Jeong on the...
that would be amazing.
Thing is, though, this is the crazy thing about this show is that I feel like every week I throw out something ridiculous, and then the next week I'm like, oh, well, actually, that might happen. Like, the reaction to this has been incredible.
Yeah,
yeah, it's been great.
But that was another fun episode, guys. Mm-hmm. The morals here are: we want Asian stories, we want black stories, we want all the stories. Mm-hmm. Watchmen. Simple as that.
If you do check out the Darkest Timeline, in particular, the Keith David and Daniel Day Kim episodes deal with some of the topics that we're talking about. Keith David deals with racism in the industry against black people, and Daniel Day Kim deals with his experiences as an Asian American in the industry.
Amazing.
So
And then, so if you do go and watch that podcast, spam every comment section, every review section, just saying you need to go on Three Black Halflings. That's all we need you to do. Yeah, just spam it.
Because we're adorable.
We're adorable, and we want to do podcasts with Ken Jeong, please.
Yeah. Bill Cosby just appeared. We're looking to do the podcast.
We're looking to do the podcast. Amazing. Yeah. So thank you very much for listening to another episode of Three Black Halflings. We hope you've enjoyed it. And we will see you next week, Halflings. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.